You and I need to find out a little bit more about this fare rise, how it's calculated, whether it's worthwhile. Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Futures joins me now. Bruce, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
So it's predicted that we will see rises of 3.5% next year.
Yeah.
Is it right that fare rises are based on a measure of inflation that the rest of us do not use?
Absolutely not. Even the Bank of England's governor, Mark Carney, said very recently that he thinks it should be put to bed. The problem is, of course, in the real world, inflation is lower than that. The government always says that CPI is its preferred measure, and things like, you know, benefits and pensions often tend to be based on CPI. So, you know, you've got fares which are sort of going up in real terms and taking an ever larger chunk out of people's wallets.
So the government for rail fares uses RPI, which is the retail prices index. You would perhaps prefer them to use CPI, which is the consumer prices index. I mean, I would prefer them to use something else entirely, which is what is your business? What money do you need? And would you like to justify it to the taxpayer or anybody else before it's agreed? And by the way, there's going to be a cap as to the most that you can raise your fares given certain targets. But it seems as if this is almost built into the system that they're going to have this extra money every year, and then they build it into their models. I do not understand why we've allowed ourselves to get into this situation.
Well, I kind of agree with you. We have rail fares which are the most expensive in Europe. And, of course, the effect of that inevitably is to deter people from using the railways. And the railways, you know, an environmentally friendly form of transport. And if you're pricing people off the railways, the effect you're going to have is to drive them onto the roads, with the obvious sort of obvious result that we'll have even more congestion and more gridlock on the roads. So, you know, the government claims, doesn't it, that it's supposed to be the greenest one ever, but it's not supporting green modes of transport.
But you say that, but then on the other hand, if we did have too many people on the trains, we wouldn't have people standing, we wouldn't have all sorts of chaos, and we wouldn't have all sorts of queues and whatnot when it comes to using them. I mean, I don't necessarily think that underuse is a problem on our trains, but I do think that if, for example, you have bought some kind of season ticket, you really should be able to get some kind of a seat to sit down, even if the routes are busy.
Yeah, and part of the reason the government's sort of able to get away with that is that the numbers of passengers using the trains continues to rise, or at least it has done for the last 20 years, although there's signs now that the passenger growth is levelling off, meaning that at last the government is succeeding in pricing people off the railways, which is obviously possibly not its intended action, but it's the result that's happening.
What I don't get necessarily is where we should be looking for inspiration for our train system from. In the past, one has looked to perhaps places around Europe. I would not necessarily recommend going to France anymore, because I think they've underinvested in recent years in their train system, perhaps to Switzerland. But also we look to our past and this sort of glamorized version of the past of what our railways used to be like. However, in your opinion, where do you think is a good place to look?
I mean, I think you make a good point, and it's very easy to, you know, look at either our past or European railways through rose-tinted spectacles, and things aren't always quite as good as they were or they might seem. But I mean, you know, there's no doubt that the some of our European counterparts have a much better high-speed network than we have. You know, we have one line, basically, you know.
And still we have a huge fuss over people saying, oh, no, we don't want to have HS2, thank you very much. It's like, invest in high-speed rail, let's get on with it.
Well, I'm inclined to agree. And, you know, the Swiss network, I don't know whether it's quite as reliable and TikTok perfect as we imagine. But there's no doubt when it comes to things like the level of electrification or the overall cost of using the railways, both for the passenger and sort of industry costs as a whole, I think we have a lot to learn from many other countries.
Looking forward, though, I think we all recognise that more money is required. And when the rail companies say, look, we do need this extra money because we need to invest, and then we have a look at the huge investment that's required both in tracks and signalling and technology and new trains and arguably new timetables and perhaps staff and then doing stations, all this sort of thing. So we can totally understand the rationale. But what I don't get is how we as a society should be looking at ticket prices versus government subsidy versus improvement in our system. Because economically speaking, I don't think we're ever going to be able to make the railway system economically viable just by ticket sales and its economic production alone.
No, absolutely right. There's no doubt that the railways require subsidy. Although many lines are profitable, you know, many franchises are paying money back to the government rather than requiring subsidy. But I mean, this has been recognised by governments for a very, very long time. I think the fantasy of Beeching was that you could cut away the unprofitable lines and leave a profitable core, and that's nonsense, of course. And you know, pretty much every country in the world subsidises its railway, and I think we have to recognise the benefit to the economy of a railway system, because it's a great driver of economic growth, and I think there are sort of hidden paybacks that we get from the railway that we don't probably appreciate when we look at the cost of our ticket and the cost of running the railway directly.
Now, Jeremy Corbyn has been talking about, and so has his deputy John MacDonald, the Shadow Chancellor. They've been talking about nationalising the rail system, sort of piece by piece, as franchises come to an end, which perhaps would reduce the cost of such a thing. There seems to be greater public appetite for nationalisation, simply because of frustrations, perhaps, of the way that it's been working recently. Is nationalisation the best option for the railway?
Well, I'm not convinced it's the best option. It's certainly, as you rightly say, it is popular, and it's not only been done in whatever it was, 1948, I think, originally, but it's of course been done several times with the East Coast Main Line franchise when that's failed. So clearly, there's something wrong with the franchising model, and I think also that I mentioned industry costs as well. Whilst I think the individual franchisees are actually running a very tight ship and they make really, really small margins. Nonetheless, the fragmentation of the industry that's caused inevitably by privatisation adds costs to the industry as a whole. So I think, the renationalising British Rail as a whole would bring back those sort of economies of scale that we've lost.
So just finally to you, if you were Transport Minister, what would you do about this fare rise? Would you push it through on the basis that they need the money? Or would you say you're not allowed to have it because the service isn't good enough and the passengers won't support it?
I think, well, that would be a very popular move. And certainly I think there's just no excuse for continuing with RPI. It's got to be CPI. And also I'd like to raise a sort of a comparison with the motorist. The government has a very inconsistent attitude towards different modes of transport. So there hasn't been a rise in fuel duty for motorists for several years now, because they recognise that that's unpopular, but it seems okay to sting the poor old rail passenger. So I think they need to treat the rail passenger fairly and not treat them differently to motorists.
But then on the other hand, the percentage of what the motorist pays of their fuel, if you like, that, you know, nearly 65-70% of what they pay for every litre of fuel is tax. So the motorist does pay quite a lot of tax.
Well, the motorist does, but so does the rail industry. I mean, the rail industry pays fuel duty as well. And I think the economics are very stacked against the railways. There's lots of examples of sort of hidden costs that are dumped on the railway that aren't equivalently dumped on the motorist. And I know the motorist feels very hard-pressed, but actually compared to the rail industry, they get a very good deal.
Right. OK, very good. Right. Well, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning, Bruce, to talk us through that. So we will find out exactly what the fare rises will be as we hear those inflation numbers tomorrow. That's Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Futures.